to pin, someone to undertake.
Boys want
someone to fall on, someone to crawl on, someone half awake.
Boys want sex in the morning,
sex in the morning, covers at my knees.
Boys want
rotten conditions, passive positions, I am a trapeze.
Someone who's sleepy,
someone who's keeping nothing in today's.
Want somebody first hand, someone to burst and then go back to sleep.
There is nothing I like better than a jostle now and then, with the hands under the sweater and the back that starts to bend. But before my eyes are open, I don't want to have to hide from a simpleton still poking with a thimble full of pride. Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, soiling the sheets.
Sex while I'm yawning, suddenly spawning when I'm half asleep.
Want someone unconscious, somebody not just waiting for a thrill.
Want sex with surprises, sex with sunrises, someone on the pill.
There is nothing like a lover who can satisfy your needs, and the joy when you discover just how often he succeeds. But before my eyes can focus, I don't need him to surprise by descending like some locust on a field of sleeping thighs. Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, when I'm still not fresh.
Want something that strikes them, someone who likes them, fondling their flesh.
Want someone to take and someone to break and comment on their size.
Want someone to prod and someone who'll nod and then just close her eyes.
And that's Uncle Banzai, Boys Want Sex in the Morning, from their 1986 album of the same name. I think they disbanded, but they did some great songs while they were around. You're listening to Bathrob Spear's Broadsides. I'm your host, Bathrob Spear Robert Norris, and I'll be with you for the next hour and a half or two, again on a loop tape, because at the moment the station is in the deep freeze or on the run. And what we're going to do instead is just play you some interesting interviews from the streets and from the suites and from out of town and from all around the town. We're going to begin with conclusion of an interview a few days ago with Food Not Bombs San Francisco activist Keith McHenry, recently returned from the Atlanta Second International Gathering of Food Not Bombs. Food Not Bombs, as almost all of you listeners who are regular know, is an anti-hunger, anti-fascism organization, actually, concerned with the militarization of the country and the misappropriation of priorities nationwide and statewide and locally, and more recently concerned with the harassment and decriminalization of homeless people in public places. And here's Keith McHenry talking about harassment of Food Not Bombs up in Canada.
Not only is there the arrests and so on that are going on in Canada, two computers were seized by the provincial government that are really for a local newspaper that's their anarchist zine that Food Not Bombs is connected with, and it had the mailing list of all, for that zine and so on. So that's like very much like the McCarthy era type raids.
Yeah. What about California? We had what was her name?
Carrie.
Carrie
is still awaiting her last court appearance was yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, yesterday. And I have not gotten a call from her yet.
So we're talking about a woman in Whittier who is being taken to trial for serving free food without a permit, a somewhat familiar charge.
Right.
And I guess they had dropped the first charge against one of her colleagues, but she's still facing that charge, and we had thought they were going to drop the second one, but you don't know that they have.
Yeah, they may have, because we did not get any news, so...
maybe no news is good news, eh?
Right, that's what I mean. Now, one last thing is I did receive a fax from Michael Kaplan in Montreal and around the issue of homelessness in Montreal and this protest that happened on July 29th. And it says, I can't read some of it, which is unfortunate, but it said on Monday, July 29th at 5:30 to 9 o'clock a.m., approximately 70 persons were arrested after they were protesting the new status of, newfound status of Berry Square in Montreal. And it's become under the jurisdiction of the Park Services.
So who is Berry Square? What is
Berry Square? Okay, it goes on.
It's a park or something?
Yeah, it goes, Berry Square, as we prefer to call it, has been a safe haven for homeless and youth to unwind from the hardships of street life when the police are not around. And these places are getting fewer. If I dare say, the corporate monopoly of land is getting tighter every time we turn our back. There are reasons behind a party we organized at Berry Square called Midnight Snack. Youth, homeless, and concerned friends came down at midnight to contest the curfew of the square in a nonviolent manner. And what could have been more nonviolent than a party with pajama-clad people?
Oh, no, bathrobes too,
yeah,
I suppose.
You're like, the whole idea is taking off. Face painting, music, and vegetarian buffet. 300-plus people showed up for the party, and a good time was had. Food Not Bombs activists left the square at around 3 a.m., all partied out. Although I cannot recite personally the events that led to the arrestations, I will pass on what we do know up at this point. At around 4:30 a.m., a small fire was extinguished by firefighters. The partygoers let the firefighters do their jobs without any problems. After the groups proceeded to Station 33 for a short demonstration to contest police brutality in general, as I understand, this went on without incident. One half of the group then made its way back to the square where they were met with riot police. Between 5:30 a.m. and 9 o'clock a.m., approximately 70 people were arrested. Friday, they are still in custody.
Wow.
Tonight at 5 p.m., there will be a demonstration to speak out against the events which took place this morning. We encourage you to please attend.
So the event that they want you to attend was yesterday, actually, and were there more arrests yesterday?
We have not received a phone call yet this morning about what happened at the 5 p.m. protest that happened on the 30th of July.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have called his house, Michael's house, to see if he...
You have a phone number for people to call if they want to contact that Food Not Bombs group?
Yeah, they should call 514-529-6502. And ask for Michael. That's one of the cookhouses at the Montreal Food Not Bombs. The also this past Saturday they did have a protest in Quebec City downtown against police brutality, and they're calling this a national or a provincial campaign against police repression. And there's people in Toronto also starting to organize around that. And in fact, you yourself received.
So you say I received a letter yesterday from Toronto?
Yeah, from the Toronto Coalition of the Homeless. I guess you had written them a letter, and they had written you back. And so they were, like, contacting you.
Through you.
Through you.
Because the jail doesn't forward any mail, I'm finding, and
right.
It all comes back to a sender.
I did open it up, not reading the, you know, because I just came to my box and then I realized it was addressed to you afterwards.
Okay, federal crime, Mr. McKenna.
It is a federal crime, but I did not read your personal letter, but I did read their little handouts, which they sent, included with it, their flyers, and they were like, they have this thing called Bread Not Circuses, which was a protest against the Olympics that they are holding in Toronto, Canada.
Wow.
Which, and they gave away free food at this event. That was pretty amazing. So there's a lot going on in all these regards. And
anything else in San Francisco you want to acquaint us with before we hit the road?
Well, the main thing that I am personally trying to encourage is people's involvement in the National No Police Brutality Day.
Right, we talked about that. Anything in the next couple weeks that, in terms of upcoming meetings or...
That's the main thing that I'm conscious of right now, although there's certainly going to be some stuff developing in the next couple of weeks around the issue of defending the rights of the homelessness, because, for instance, there is supposed to be a summit coming up in September here in San Francisco on homelessness.
Well, I read yesterday the Examiner claimed there was some sort of two-day economic summit that happened day before yesterday in San Francisco.
That I'm unaware of.
Right, well...
But there's supposed to be something for homeless people's rights, or economic summit for the homeless in September is what it was proposed as. The thing that happened maybe this past week were planning meetings for that. I'm not sure.
Streets of Santa Cruz and the Revolutionary Coalition, Common Threads Coalition, anti-sleeping ban table, which has been reappearing more and more frequently on the mall, and is usually found across from Woolworth's on Pacific Avenue.
So it's mall time again down, they're mauling the homeless down here on the mall, right across from the Gap, and we're here at the Support the the Houseless table, frequently run by the Revolutionary Coalitionites, such as the notorious
Liz.
And Liz, you're not only standing around gathering signatures and trying to do your best to bring in the voices of America, or in this case Santa Cruz, but you are actually going to get a job half a block from here. Is that true?
I hope so.
You applied to...
East meets West.
Ah, and then you're going to find out if in fact East meets West will meet you.
Mm-hmm. I take my nose ring out.
I see. You have to take your nose ring out? And they made that a mandatory requirement?
Well, they said they'd prefer it, so I asked if I could have a little diamond stud in it. So they're checking to see if that's all right. She's going to call me on Friday for an interview.
Now, you've been out here. How many days have you tabled in the last few weeks?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. 10 plus?
And what kind of reaction have you met with?
A lot of people not really knowing what a sleeping ban is, or that one is going on, that the homeless people's blankets are being stolen, that there's a $162 ticket, or they'll go to jail for 6 months, which is very uninformed. A lot of people also just say no thank you. I think they know what the sleeping ban is. When they hear please help support the homeless, they know exactly what that means, and they don't want to help. They don't want to help support.
Sort of help evict the homeless, that's right.
Exactly. That's exactly what they want to do. The same people that probably would say, get a job, or they're all alcoholics, or something like that.
Well, do you feel that you're kind of losing momentum, gaining momentum, holding steady, looking for new options?
I think we're doing good. I think that we're getting a lot of people that, I've been having a lot of good dialogue with a lot of people down here, support, mainly from young people. But there's a lot of people, young people that walk by me, they're just not interested. I mean, they're so far into their reality, they're just like so way out there, you know. They're just not down to earth at all. They're into like consuming on Pacific Avenue. And so that's kind of
shopping is important, you know, in modern day America.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what else is there to do but watch TV and shop?
Right, exactly. Watch TV and shop. Keep that in mind. Anything else, Liz?
All I want to say is keep on the struggle.
Thank you. Upcoming. I'm here at the Food Not Bombs meal. It's about 5 to 10 to 6 with rumor monger Tycho Tim, a one-time broadcaster on Free Radio Santa Cruz before it closed down at noon today. Tim, or Token Tim as I call you, what rumors have you got for us?
I got a lot of rumors.
Hit it.
Okay. Scott Hager was busted. He's the medical marijuana guy. He's a guy in a wheelchair who has I'm not sure exactly what his condition is, but basically if he doesn't have marijuana, he goes into spasms, right? And so the cops came by yesterday and they took his garden. Supposedly they were looking for somebody else, somebody who was in a wheelchair as well as having and being involved with some sort of pot thing. And so they came to his door because I guess the landlord or somebody pointed him out that he was in a wheelchair, and then they smelled his garden and they came in. And basically they took his whole garden. He was roughed up a little bit, not so much intentionally like they were beating him up, but this guy's in a wheelchair, right?
They dumped him out of his wheelchair, right?
Yeah, they did. They supposedly one of the, what was the name? It was Steve Hartnell, who was being real stern with him and limiting his movement, and supposedly he was drinking this drink and went to go throw away the lid in the trash can, and he said, get back here, and they pulled his wheelchair back, and he fell forward, banged up his, had a bump on his head, banged up his arms, you know, he has no muscles in his torso, that's why he fell forward, and he also dislocated his ribs. I mean, he was showing it to us over at the farmer's market today. It was like really like sticking out. So he's going to get video on that and
sue him, we hope.
Yeah, he was going to get that done, and he's going to have a press conference, and he doesn't think that the district attorney is going to press charges
against him.
Right. But one of the interesting rumors was that supposedly, well, he was, they started talking about the center, the medical marijuana center here in town, and because they were asking, oh, you're going to make money off that marijuana? And he was saying no, how he was going to donate it to the center, and they said something like, we got news for you, that center's going down.
Mm.
Now, this is in the midst of a medical marijuana campaign statewide. I find very interesting.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I'm talking to first names only. And what happened?
Last night, they took...
Your name is?
Liberty.
What happened, Liberty?
I was drunk at our squat. and they took me to the hospital.
Were you toxically drunk? I mean.
Yeah, 2.48.
So, how long have you been in Santa Cruz here?
Like a month. About a month.
About a month. And you've been in the squad for about a month?
Yeah, I've been squatting for about a month.
And were other people removed from the squad who were not drunk, or?
She was.
You were taken out of the squad?
Yeah.
For what were you charged with, if anything?
I wasn't charged with anything.
Did they tell you to leave?
Yeah, they just told me to get all my stuff, and they chased me out of there pretty much.
And how many of you were there?
Just me and her.
And you'd been there for about a month or less?
Oh, I've been there for more than a month, sleeping there.
We're talking about a Santa Cruz City squad.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you frequently squatted places here in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, every night.
You too?
Every night.
So for how long would you say have you two been squatting for the last, what period of time?
Well, I've been here since the end of December and ever since I've been squatting.
You've been here since?
Yeah, since the end of December and ever since I've been squatting in Santa Cruz.
And you?
Before I was squatting in Santa Barbara and then up in Placerville and just all over I squat.
How is it come here in Santa Cruz compared with other cities as far as squatting goes, or is there much difference?
There's a lot of difference here. It's like they look for it. Other places they don't give a shit. You know? They don't look for campers, you know, like where I've been. They don't look for them. Here they look for them and they bust you. It's fucked up.
Now, you get accused of being underage and had all kind of curfew type checks and stuff.
Yeah, in Sacramento I got harassed with curfew a lot.
And is that your situation as well?
No.
You aren't accused of being underage?
Oh, I've been accused of being underage.
How about here in Sacramento?
But it won't stick. So. They don't know I'm underage. See, check it out. I got my hospital papers somewhere.
Is this an underage kitty here?
Yes.
So, having been driven out of one squad, where are you going?
Go to the next squad.
The next closest squad. And you're thinking of a particular place in Santa Cruz?
Huh?
You have a particular place to stay at tonight?
A thicker?
Oh,
yeah, we're gonna squat somewhere else tonight. We don't know where. No, me, my boyfriend, and her. That's my boyfriend.
Any comments for those people who want tips on squatting here in Santa Cruz?
Want to get a job so I can be a hippie?
Go to its beach, even though it's a far walk. You don't get fucked with, and don't go on a full moon because the tide comes up.
What about if you actually want to find a squat here in Santa Cruz?
Go to a place where you can go, like the shelter or like the church. Or actually, no, they can't do the church no more. We used to be allowed to go to the church. Yeah. There's like an attorney place over there. They wake you up at 7:30 every morning, and we're allowed to be there.
You're talking about Holy Cross?
No, I'm talking about, it's like right by the church. It's right by that church. It's the attorney place.
Oh, attorney place. Across from City Hall?
No, it's like by Big O Tires over there by the Nickelodeon.
Now, what about the City Hall sleepers protest? You've heard of that. What do you think of it?
I think it's cool. I've signed it a few times.
We have a critic over there.
I'm not doing anything. I don't feel it's doing anything.
So it's cool, and yet at the same time you disagree with it? Or?
It's cool if something happens, you know, and like, it's cool if like, you know, it helps, if it makes a difference. If it made a difference, I'd use my time for that, but I don't see it making a difference right now. You know, by the time it does make a difference, I'll probably be gone. I'm leaving in a few weeks, like a week or so, 2 weeks. I'm going out to Colorado, Boulder.
Well, thank you, Liberty. Anything you wish to say? Hey, Devin, you want to air some words here? Or? You got to come closer if you do. A distant critic. Hey, Gideon. How you doing, man? I heard you were feeling poorly, man. Sorry about that. Do you want to do an interview, or are you suffered enough?
I'm writing down everything these days. It hurts too much.
I got you. We're talking to Gideon, who, through an accident, essentially a sleep deprivation accident, fell down and smashed his jaw, which is fractured and broken both. and then had some horrible experiences at the hospital, a Dominican hospital, where he saw the discriminatory treatment that homeless people get, people without money. At some point, when you're able to talk, we'll ask you more questions about it.
Definitely.
You know, perhaps if you write about it, we can read what you've written aloud.
Yeah.
We'll do that on the air, if we ever go on the air again, of course.
Yeah.
Another question. I hear this is the man who essentially led you into all these problems, Pat Ring.
Hold it together, man. Hold it together.
Hello.
So, Mr. Ring, what are you doing at Food Not Bombs when you're a known Feed the People person?
No. That's wrong.
No?
I used to work for Feed the People.
Right.
But it's a corrupt organization, and I had to sever
corrupt
my...
in what way?
I had to sever my ties and join the opposition.
I see.
Actually, for quite a while, I worked for both groups.
Mm-hmm.
Now I work for Food Not Bombs exclusively.
Is Feed the People still operating, in fact?
Yes. John Earth is carrying on.
Is he a corrupt individual?
Sean Alimi is the corrupt individual. John Earth is a very fine individual.
And I understand Sean Alimi has left town.
No, he's still in town.
Oh, really?
He has nothing to do with Feed the People anymore. He's,
He quit.
No, he didn't quit. He's a fat, lazy guy. He lays on the couch and he, doesn't do anything. He, pushes women around and, headbutts smaller people and, screams at people, but he does it all with love!
Good,
hey,
good.
I scream at people. Don't you scream at people?
Well?
Don't make that man talk.
Yeah.
Hey! Gideon! Tell me a story!
You're just fine.
Tell me a story!
Here we have it, the usual number. So is Feed the People still feeding?
Yeah, they feed every day, for 4 days a week.
And so you say you don't help them anymore, mainly because of problems with Sean?
Problems with Sean, yeah.
But he's not with the organization, you say?
Well, he still is. He just doesn't do anything.
Right.
Thinks he is Feed the People, but he has no hand in preparing the food, has no hand in collecting the food, has no hand in fundraising, doesn't do anything but sit around and take the credit for stuff. Never the blame, only the credit.
Well, is this a change in Sean's behavior? Because I know in the past he has been quite active in gathering food.
Yeah, he's gradually over the last several months he's been slacking off more and more till he's at the point now where he doesn't do anything.
So, you yourself, on the other hand, are going to be taking a all-expenses-paid tour of the South, right?
Yeah, I'm on sabbatical for, all-expenses-paid. Yeah, all-expenses-paid by myself, yeah.
All-expenses-unpaid, right?
Yeah, so I'll be leaving.
Going to Los Angeles.
To Long Beach, yeah, same thing. Yeah, see Mom.
Sort of a family trip.
Yeah.
Well,
get out of this hellhole and go to another hellhole.
Well, that's depressing.
But I am going to be in Long Beach at the same time as the Reform Party National Convention.
Oh, you're
going to
check that out?
I'm going to check that out, yes.
We'll expect a report from you on the Long Beach Reform Party Convention.
Yeah, I'll definitely either crash it or I'll do, at the very least, I'll do some interviews out front with the misguided people who are...
believing that reform can have a change.
Right, yeah. So it's going to be a... I guess it's going to be between Dick Lamb and Ross Perot, whoever gets the nomination for that party. So
sounds shocking. I think it sounds like a snoozer, actually. Thank you, Mr. Ring.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Robert.
If only Lois knew Clark Kent could see through her dress, she could have flown to his arms and uncovered his ass. She could have torn off his trousers, discovered his tights. He wouldn't put up a fight. If only Lois knew that at the time of ascent, Superman blasted off and there wasn't no Kent. She could have clung to the wingspan, a fly on the wall. He wouldn't let her fall, but her mouth never moved, and her hair stayed in place. Too little magic in so stiff a face, framed in the bunnies, captioned and stripped. 10 cents a copy, too cheap a script. If only Lois knew that Kent was light years away, that in the name of Krypton, he was saving the day. She could have leapt on his steno in one single bound, but he was never around. She would.
the trouble is, Lois was lost on the man-made planet, lost in her own daily planet. If only Lois knew that at the scene of a crime, Kent was not to be seen, but always filed on time. He always scooped up a story in super disguise. She always looked so surprised. He kept an X-ray eye upon her. She slept alone on Loveless Lane. He never sacrificed his honor. He never took her on his flame. She didn't like the meek and shrinking. She always thought she'd like to fly. He always knew what she was thinking when she was staring at the sky. She wouldn't know love if it only went in one way, taking off with her desk as a runway. If he told her the truth and the rules of the order, as he dressed in the phone booth and he asked her for quarters, Lois was lost on the man-made of granite, lost in her own daily planet. If only Lois knew Clark Kent could see through her dress, she could have flown to his arms and uncovered his ass. She could have had herself a layout, some news she could feel, with a man made of steel.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, the community radio station of the future. If you want to comment on this show, you're listening to Bathrop Spears Broadsides, usually on Mondays from 10 to 12, and Fridays from 10 to 12 in the morning. But we're playing loop tapes, and this is a recorded version of the show because the station is in flux. As I said, if you want to comment on this show, give a call to 408-423-4833 and leave a message of any length. If you want to have something put on the air that concerns civil rights for the poor and you think would be appropriate for this show, put it on the message machine and I will transcribe it and we'll put it on the air. We are waiting for comments. We are waiting for your criticism. We're waiting for dialogue. That's what the show is about. And you're also listening to selections from the Uncle Banzai tape of Boys Like Sex in the Morning. And you'll be hearing more of that as we go along.
It's like, what rights do the poor have down here? I'm tired of being harassed, which I have been.
And when were you harassed recently, Kat?
About a week and a half ago by a lady on the bus.
And what happened there?
Oh, she went on this thing about clothes and people and about people not being dressed properly. I mean, you can see what I'm wearing. Everything's covered down to the elbows and to the ankles here. Also, there was another fellow the other day who asked what boat did she just come off of. They were tourists and I live here. I'd like to know what's going on with these people. Somebody tell them locals wear clothing, not off the rack, what we want.
And there you have it, the latest fashion statement on fascism from Kat of Tower Lodge. Thank you, Kat.
You're welcome.
I really hope we can get back on the phone lines and into a studio where there's a phone connection soon, because it really makes for interesting dialogue and discussion. For instance, at the Monday show a week ago, we had some real hot debate between Battling Bob LaMonica, as I call him, and various other homeless activists about the utility or lack thereof of the City Hall sleepers protest. He was very concerned that the sleepers protest is making a bad impression and was concerned with people only of one ideological type and was alienating public opinion and had failed and so forth, and was counterproductive. And actually the protest was defended by a number of other people who felt that whatever criticisms they had of it, it was nonetheless at the moment the only game in town. And then Bob LaMonica came up with several other suggestions, such as an initiative to put the sleeping ban on the ballot, move to get city council members to act to put it on the agenda for a discussion. And then there was a third ruling, possibly to take it to the courts, I'm not quite sure.
We kind of thought about these proposals afterward, I and a couple of other activists. Problem with the initiative proposal is it really had to be done, it had to be begun even before the City Hall protests started, like in January of this year, for it to make the November ballot, where there will be a chance of getting some liberal votes during an on-year presidential election. During off-year elections, you get all the right-wing conservatives, bigots, and rednecks coming out, people with money as well, who are likely to vote down any law which will expand the rights of the poor, as ending the sleeping sections of the camping ban would. And for those who are new to Santa Cruz, there's a law in Santa Cruz making it illegal to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night, a municipal code passed in 1978 and then made worse in 1979 with the vote of then-freshman council member Michael Rotkin, who is now our mayor and running for re-election in November, and who still holds the same position that he held way back in 1979, that it's just perfectly okay to make it illegal for poor people to sleep at night outside. And that's somehow part of the grand scheme that for Santa Cruz to change this would subject it to an influx of dozens, hundreds, thousands, millions, depending on when you talk to him, of homeless people to our town. So, anyway, the discussion about the sleeping ban will continue. Candidate David Minton Silva, who has been doing lots of campaigning. In fact, one of his campaign representatives, Monkey Wrencher Dave, was reportedly told that if he didn't leave the Cabrillo Wine Festival, which is the festival held right outside the Civic Auditorium yesterday, Saturday, August 3rd, that he would be arrested if he gave out political pamphlets with David Minton Silva's name on them. I then immediately started doing that, and for some reason I wasn't arrested. Maybe they were getting tired of making threats that they couldn't keep. It's interesting, these sort of semi-public events have a history of going after homeless activists who show up with literature they don't like. A couple years ago, San Lorenzo Benchlands was the site of a large spring fair, and I guess Robert Flory and Linda the Lark Edwards and Wanton Dave Jacobs, old-time homeless activists, the only one of whom left is Robert Flory, valiantly holding down Food Not Bombs, by the way. He needs help. Call 425-3345. Food Not Bombs needs help with cookers and servers. But in any case, there's a tendency of some of these events to go after homeless activists. And Wanton Dave was arrested, and Linda Edwards was told to leave, and so was I. The claim being that it was a privatized area, somewhat similar to what some merchants are doing in front of their cafes on the Pacific Avenue Mall, making it illegal to play an instrument, let's say, or to set up a political table unless these activities are in keeping with the political or musical tastes of the management. This is the Coonerty Cafe Law, passed in 1994 by Bookshop Santa Cruz owner and then city council member Neil Coonerty. This is the same man who wrote a letter to the judge recommending that I be thrown into the slammer for serving free food to the homeless, as I was, for 28 days. And I guess Neil earned a few criticisms in written form for that particular decision. Anyway, David Minton Silva seems to be considered a subversive figure, or at least those giving out his literature are being given trouble at the Cabrillo. And this is a Santa Cruz event that apparently is. It's got a lot of little local businesses. I saw John, my favorite coffee vendor, whose roaming stand is usually in front of the Logos bookstore. He was there selling coffee. He had some criticisms of the Revolutionary Coalition March. Revolutionary Coalition is a group that has been doing a lot of tabling on the mall around the issue of the sleeping ban. Jess Mann, Jim Costner, Mad Dog Mike, Liz, Kevin, a whole bunch of folks associated with that group are really doing very intense tabling and very intense flyering, and they have a march every Saturday at 2 o'clock, which I unfortunately missed. My apologies to the marchers. I was busy making a flyer, which I got done, but I got done 2 hours late, and folks who want the latest flyer, my first since I returned from jail, should check out the City Hall Sleepers protest, where I've left copies of it. It's a sort of an update on what's been happening at the City Hall Sleepers protest and a discussion of the upcoming City Council races a little bit, plus the upcoming SCAN meeting. SCAN is Santa Cruz Action Network, a kind of
a little cliquey. Well, it has been cliquey in the past. It's a sort of a politically correct group, which out of which city council members emerge, sometimes in revolving door fashion, like Mike Rotkin, who is running for his fourth, yes, you heard it, fourth term on the city council. And SCAN is sort of the kingmaker and the queenmaker group in town, because candidates they endorse almost invariably have won over the last 15 or so years. SCAN sometimes takes genuinely progressive positions around homeless issues and civil rights issues, favoring a police review board, favoring a campground sanctuary, maybe this year favoring an end to the sleeping ban, who knows. But the people who are elected don't seem to have to go by what the SCAN council votes. So for instance, Squawk Box Scott Kennedy, or Campground Killer Kennedy as I call him, is one of the two men on the city council now, and who was elected in 1994 with, I believe, SCAN endorsement, helped pass the Bedtime for Beggars law, which is a law which makes it illegal to ask for spare change peacefully after dark, ask for spare change from a seated position, ask for spare change in a group of more than one, ask for spare change in all kinds of locations around the mall, a whole bunch of restrictions that have nothing to do with aggressive or abusive behavior, but are an attempt to cater to the whims, fancies, and prejudices of merchants downtown who want to essentially rid the area of unsightly poor people who they feel spoil their businesses. And Palo Alto is experiencing a similar situation. There's a Palo Alto no-sitting law coming down the pike, which we hope to have more information on from KKUP's Purusha Oblati, who's a frequent speaker on that station. Hope I can get his radio times right in my next tape, and I'll pass that on to you. I'm hoping we can do an interview with him as well. Well, so things are continuing to percolate here in Santa Cruz. There's not anything happening with city council meetings, although there usually isn't anything happening in city council meetings anyway, but there are no meetings in August yet, although there have been rumors that the Community House project, the Trailers Not Trolls 40-person, $1.3 million project that replaced the homeless campground and is now being funded with all kinds of homeless monies that should be going to real homeless projects instead of these boondoggle special show projects that provide lots of money for salaries and not much real space for the basic needs of the emergency shelter needs of the homeless population here. If that project doesn't get its HUD funding, the rumor has it that Scott Kennedy is going to ask for a special session of City Council to vote extra money for a community house. I actually had a long interview with Frank Pusilik, who's the director of Community House, and a very amiable and friendly guy he is, unlike his grinning but rather unapproachable counterpart, Daryl Darling, who's, I guess, was considering running for City Council, but according to the latest Good Times, has set aside that particular political ambition. Darling has earned my wrath ever since he lied to campers back in November of last year. He actually made a deal with him that he then broke and took no responsibility for, which was the right of campers to stay through the winter in the campground. The campground was not supposed to close until 10 days after permits were granted, which ended up being in February, or until a renegotiation happened, or until January 1st, whichever was later, and since all this was later than January 1st, they closed it down in mid-December. Rotkin, Kennedy, Daryl Darling, and then ISSP Director, pardonnez-moi, Paul Merceau. Paul Merceau's position has been taken over by Ron Howard, and we have a new kind of mini-shelter situation happening in Holy Cross Church Pavilion, which is good, except completely inadequate for the number of people that are in Santa Cruz and that need a place to stay, or at least need not to be harassed for sleeping at night. This is something that our powers that be, including Scott, supposedly anti-sleeping ban Kennedy, can't see his way clear to dealing with. Anyway, Frank Pusilik is a fellow who's certainly outspoken, well, not outspoken, but he's willing to speak to you. I find him a very nice guy. Daryl Darling is actually a nice guy as well. It's not a question of whether they're nice or not. It's a question of whether they keep their word, whether they represent the interests of homeless people, whether they engage in advertising that is not false advertising, but that actually represents what they're really doing. So, for instance, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is supposed to be, I would say, concerned with the rights of homeless people, or at least services for homeless people. And they have no homeless people on their board of directors at the moment, except one guy, poor Ray McMinn, who's still in jail back in Virginia, and we'll be having an update on him later. But and they've barred homeless activists like myself from their meetings, and they don't allow people to tape record or video their meetings anymore because that kind of that kind of would let people know what's going on in those meetings. And if you look it over carefully, it's not a truly pretty sight. A lot of money is going to waste, and a lot of good intentions are going to waste, and a lot of fundraising is happening on the backs of the homeless, while the only homeless campground area, the homeless property where people have been sleeping, admittedly is something of a toxic dump, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, is now a locked-off, fenced-off area, which is supposed to be the site for Community House, the 40-person trailer project that will actually cost people, what, $620 a month to stay in, although Frank Tusilek said that if you, it would cost you one-third of your income. That was his latest statement. So if you have no income, it wouldn't cost you anything. I find myself skeptical about this, even not so much to challenge Frank's word as to look at the feasibility of a project run on no income. We're in the midst of a crisis here. That's the subject of my most recent flyer, which talks about the cutting of welfare, AFDC, at the federal level, the dismantling of the SSI situation for people who are in drug and alcohol-dependent categories, which is going to begin in January of 1997, and, of course, the complete devastation of GA. Last year, the state-mandated GA requirements disappeared, and so it's up to each county to spend as little or as much or as littler as it wants. And we've had predictions from people like Lighthouse Linda LeMaster of Housing Now in Santa Cruz, Becky Johnson, board member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the only one that I know of who's really an advocate for homeless people there, possibly with the exception of Ray McMinn, who isn't really on the scene, who say that this means thousands more homeless on the streets by the summer of 1997, a year from now. And what do we got? You know, a fancy 40-person project by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless supplanting a 300-person campground. Well, 150 to 250, 300 is stretching it. Not good. Not very good at all. And lies about it. Lies and cover-up about it by the city council and by these groups that are supposed to be providing help for the homeless. Well, let's have a little more singing here. Enough of this groaning and grumbling. Here's more of Uncle Banzai, Boys Want Sex in the Morning album.
We'd like to do a song that is about my seventh grade year as a cheerleader in Indiana. Were you all cheerleaders? We have meetings now just to keep the old spirit alive. But this song contains one of the finest Hoosier cheers that's from Indiana ever created. You'll recognize it when it comes, and if you do know it, please join us. This song is about the kind of cheerleaders we must have been back then. It's called Cheerleaders on Drugs. How do they jump so high?
How do they flip their legs?
And spread their legs so wide?
And the whiskers that they
how do they mount each one?
To make their hair amazing.
Is it the drugs they're on?
They spend all their money.
They wear their dark sunglasses.
They play their games at night.
The players make their passes.
They drop their pom-poms just right.
The mascot sneaks in sight.
He's probably overspread.
The game's not over yet.
It's time to go to bed.
It seems like they must be on drugs or just stupid. They're buoyant and busty and just plain dumb. It seems like they're brainwashed or on anesthesia. Their brain suffers weight loss, cause how else could they cheer? Like, go, you engines, go, go, you engines. Mmm, chagawa, mmm, chagawa. Go, you engines, go, go, you engines. Mmm, chagawa, engines got the power. Go, G, O, go. mental growth. It makes it hard to find a future livelihood for others out there. The marching band, it seems, the boys in the stands, the refs and both the teams are all the raving fans. Oh, cheerleaders on drugs. Cheerleaders on drugs. Cheerleaders on drugs. It seems like I'm off it. On drugs are just stupid. They're buoyant and busted. I just think dumb. The drug interaction could just be some teamwork. Their forces and factions make them sound like, go, you engines, go, you engines. Here's something we used to do back then. Go, you engines, go, you engines. And this too. Oh, give me an I, give me an N, N, give me a J.
J, U, N, S.
Oh, you Indians, go, oh, you Indians.
Go, you Indians, go, oh, you Indians.
Go, you Indians, go, oh, you Indians.
Go, you Indians, go, cheerleaders on drugs.
Go, you Indians, go,
cheerleaders on drugs.
Go, you Indians, go,
cheerleaders on drugs.
Now, most people who've been struggling to get some kind of input into the city's government policy division know about city council meetings. They're the second and fourth Tuesdays of every month at City Hall, 809 Center Street. They take place right next to the City Hall sleepers protest. So if you know where the protest is, you just go into that big, uselessly empty building, which should be available for shelter at night, and instead is used as a sort of a rubber stamping podium for the gang of seven city council members who do their thing every second and fourth Tuesday at 3:30 and then again at 7. But also note that there's no city council meeting scheduled through August, as I mentioned before. And people know also about the police review board, which is a sort of the fig leaf toy poodle gang that gets together and makes little yaps about the police department but never takes any significant criticism. That's happening every Monday, I guess it's the second Monday of every month at 5 o'clock, again in the same place, City Council Chambers at 809 Center Street. But there's another group that meets called the Downtown Commission, and that meets, I think it's the fourth Thursday of every month at 1 o'clock in Council Chambers. And this is a group essentially of downtown merchants who meet and propose laws like sit on the sidewalk, go to jail, fence off the Ford's parking lot, let's have more parking meters downtown, let's put in some change-making machines, which will make it illegal for people to sit within 50 feet of them, let's consider new anti-panhandling laws, and so forth. They also consider other mundane matters like parking considerations and other things of that sort. And I kind of attend their meetings because I began to realize this is sort of the embryonic pool out of which emerges the creature from the Black Lagoon that eventually stalks out of city council meeting as a law. I'm thinking, again, most particularly the downtown ordinances, which were passed in 1994. Six nasty laws making it illegal to sit down, making it illegal to ask for money, making it illegal to have spare change demonstrations, I'm sorry, making it illegal to have nighttime demonstrations on the mall, homeless demonstrations, tightening the sleeping ban, and there were several other provisions in these laws about non-commercial events and non-commercial displays and so forth, making it illegal to put up a table in front of a cafe, you heard me mention this earlier, a whole bunch of laws that affect poor people and activists. So, the Downtown Commission is the place to go to check where these things bubble up from. And I was there last Thursday, actually. That's the same day of the month that the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has its once a month board meeting, which is out at Garfield Park Church at Arrett Circle, Woodrow and California Streets, for any of you folks who are interested in attending that meeting, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board of Directors meeting, which is at 4 o'clock. 3 hours after the Downtown Commission meets at 1 o'clock at City Hall on the fourth Thursday of every month. Well, I was at the Downtown Commission at the last meeting, and here am I criticizing and making some statements, and see what you think. You'll also be able to hear a little bit from the Downtown Commission and the debate they have. The subject under discussion eventually had to do with things like the menace of panhandling or the nuisance of panhandling.
Members of the Downtown Commission, my name is Robert Morse. I'm a resident of Santa Cruz, a participant in downtown who does buy from many downtown businesses and is friends with others that he doesn't buy from at times. I'm concerned about an issue that you're all probably aware of, the city sleeping ban in Santa Cruz that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night. The position of homeless people has become particularly precarious because, as you know, there is no legal place for people to be at night other than 30 spots in the Intercate Satellite Shelter Program, which are taken up by people who are pretty much permanently disabled. The impact on the downtown on this issue, of course, is you have a lot more people downtown day and night. If you want to compare the number of people you have downtown this year with the number you had last year when there was an open Coral Street open-air shelter, you can clearly see the difference. There are many more people downtown, but there could be other reasons as well. But the fact that there is not an open-air shelter is one big reason for that. The council has made a lot of noises about doing something about this that hasn't. And I feel that if the merchants put in a voice about the need for this, you would get a lot more action. We would get a lot more action in the council. And you might be relieved to some extent of some of the problems downtown. That's a consideration we'll bring to your attention. Another is that there is an ongoing protest here in front of City Hall around this issue, City Hall sleeper situation, which the City Council is refusing to respond to at all. Many people on the protest feel that we have to take this issue directly into the streets of the downtown area, do things like daytime sleepouts downtown in order to impress tourists with the cruelty and the kind of human rights abuses that are going on toward homeless people at night. This would impact your businesses, and it would be done specifically to draw media attention to what's going on. If there are other ways of resolving this issue, of course, we would love to see that happen, but so far the council has remained intransigent. There are other things I want to discuss with you that I'll bring up when you discuss the downtown ordinances in terms of the, I guess it's item 3 or item 2 on your agenda, and I'll be talking about that. I would like to see a constructive solution to this whole question brought out. I'm usually in the position of a loud, confrontational voice on the issue because I feel the issue has to be brought forward. But in spite of that, my main interest is in seeing a resolution to these problems. I don't think people should be criminal for being in public spaces, nor do I feel that merchants should have their businesses obstructed. I feel that everyone must have their rights respected in this situation, and the way to do it is for us to get together and talk about it. The council has shown it's no longer really as much interested in giving the downtown association at least everything it wants around, for example, the issue of the farmers market. And what we need now is to have everybody talking together on these issues. We're making resolutions such as the Drumming resolution, which I understand is working out pretty well. It didn't involve laws, it involved human beings sitting down and working out agreements. And I think the same thing could be done around panhandling, the same thing could be done around unacceptable behaviors downtown, the same thing could be done about grievances that homeless people have at certain restaurants and cafes. I think that talking as reasonable people can be a resolution, and I would bring this to your attention and suggest that this might be something you might want to put on your agenda at a future meeting. Thank you.
Speaking next is Crossroads Chris Brazda, who I've occasionally taken to being called Crosswires Chris Brazda because of his often outrageous behavior at homeless demonstrations. Sometimes he's become abusive and threatening. That hasn't happened in the last 2 months. I want to commend Chris for that not happening. He also was quite prolific in writing me when I was in jail, and I want to publicly acknowledge his writing. He's a very good writer, and he has a lot to say. The problem is the kinds of behaviors that he engages in when he's not writing and when he gets aggressive and angry. And a lot of people who are listening to me know of what I say, and I'm glad that that's not happening now, but I think that now that it isn't happening, it's important for Chris to take stock of what's going on and see if there's a way to kind of cut short the deadly cycle that usually happens in his life where he goes ahead with this stuff. And this may sound a little personal for a radio show, but Chris is a man who's in the middle of a lot of homeless activism, and we need his help and we need his support, and we don't need his abusive behavior and aggressive behavior. And I'm really appealing to him and other members of the community to dialogue with him on this issue so that we can prevent this from happening again. So, here's Chris speaking at the Downtown Commission.
We get one more speaker. Chris Brazda read the New York Times today, and the House and Senate have both passed a version of the bill to take an enormous amount of money out of welfare, $60 billion over 6 years, says page 810 of today's Times. Reading from the editorial, the House bill would not set a limit, would set a limit of 90 days for food stamps for workers under the age of 50. So many people out here get nothing, would get absolutely nothing after 90 days, including food stamps. So similarly, they begin to starve to death or they'd be overloaded. We're talking about $60 billion over 6 years. And the Senate version would set a limit of 3 months, 4 months in any 1 year for food stamps. Now, I know the agricultural combines need large farming. It was created by destroying the small farming is supported due to the extent of something like $14 billion. And the food stamp program is about that. So we pay as much people not to grow food as we do people to eat it. And now we're going to cut $60 billion. So the problem's going to become much worse. It's going to be a system that's designed to destroy itself because it'll be a beggar-thy-neighbor situation, the same way we have the homeless now. So the second thing is, that's horrible news. I hope he leaves it. The second thing is how to deal with the people down there. We should take a social or sociological view of how to deal with people down there and hire more sociologists and those type of people to mediate conflict. Then you treat it as a law enforcement, because it's really cruel and unusual to deprive someone of sleep. I'm homeless myself, and I can't escape the county because I'm on probation, and I can't obey the condition of probation, which is to obey all laws, which means I can't sleep at night. So a real blow, $60 billion gutted over 6 years, and the cities are passing laws just to compete in order to push people who don't make college degrees and get good incomes and sit on boards like this and have businesses and have fine lives out of existence. Thank you.
And the next speaker is William Walker. William Walker is one of the River Street refugees. He's also drunk at the mic. Now, some people are going to say, what's the point of even rebroadcasting what a drunk man has to say? Well, there are plenty of people with alcohol problems, including people on the board of directors of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless who have alcohol problems. It's people who are homeless, who are outside, whose alcohol problems become exposed for everybody to see. And what the issues are is more important than even the state of sobriety or intoxication of the person saying them. And so here's William. So let's consider the content of what people are saying. Actually, the next speaker is Anthony Patanjo. Anthony is a stalwart at the Homeless Sleepers Vigil who heard there was a public meeting, came in, and added this to the dialogue.
I've lived here about 16 years off and on, you know, and I've been camping up one, and I camped up nine, too. And I've seen where, like, the police would come around, you know, horses, you know, and these guys, you know, they weren't necessarily dirtying up the place, eating paper all over the place, you know, they just got camping tickets and knew it, even though they would be up here camping. I've seen people down by the river, when they're camping down there, a lot of them people are out of homes, you know. They've been living in a home, so they don't understand littering is bad. They just kind of like throw everything around there because they've been out most of their lives. There are no dangling booms, you know, or anything kind of that kind of sort. But, you know, I feel like if you can drop this camping van and have the police say, now either keep it clean or face a littering ticket, because a littering ticket is worse than a camping ticket. Something there to be solved. As illegal camping. Anthony Patanjo. And well, I don't believe people should be sleeping downtown either. I mean, right on the city, kind of around, unless you're That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next we have the slightly intoxicated William Walker.
$65,000 for a fence. I haven't seen the fence. He got $120,000. He got $17,000 for consultation. You know, community house. Where's the fence? Okay. Bring it up to the council. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Now we have a pretty hot news flash that's just come up in the last 24 hours, which you can actually read about in today's Sentinel. That's August 5th Sentinel, Monday, and the August 5th San Jose Mercury News. The cannabis club in San Francisco has been busted, presumably by state agents, and the story is in both newspapers and has been broadcast on KCBS and also mentioned by Free Radio Santa Cruz's Skidmark Bob Duran in broadcasts on Sunday. So my response was to call Los Angeles and talk to Scott Immler, who's part of the Compassionate Initiative down there, as well as to call the San Francisco Club, and you're now going to hear the tape of those two calls. These calls happened yesterday, and I got subsequent information that three demonstrations are planned in San Francisco for today, essentially at the court where there are arraignments planned, although whether there are people actually in custody is a question of some contention. There's also a Board of Supervisors meeting on Monday in San Francisco, and there's going to be demonstrations there, and I believe there's going to be a third demonstration at another court, a state court, where Dan Lundgren is supposedly going to speak on how Dan Lundgren is the state attorney general on the need to close down cannabis clubs statewide. There's also some concern about the Santa Cruz Club, which I believe the latest plan there, and again, I haven't gotten the definitive word, is for people to gather at 201 Maple Street, which is the cannabis club, at 5 o'clock to support the club from any threatened shutdowns and confiscations. And there's also a planned demonstration, I believe, tomorrow, Tuesday, at the Board of Supervisors, August 6th, when Marty Wormhout will speak out against this policy, which I believe will be about 9 o'clock. Again, the times are a little uncertain, so you might want to try calling the 423-4833 Huff line to get more information. I'll try to update the message when I get new information. But here are two interviews on the issue of the arrests yesterday, the attack on the cannabis clubs. Okay, it's August 4th, 1996, and we've just placed a call to Scott Immler, who I call Scofflaw Scott, who's one of the main coordinators of the statewide Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana campaign and the initiative to put it on the ballot. He said that recent polling results by their organization shows 78% support for the medical marijuana initiative. He suspects this is the reason for all the police activity, the attempt to turn things around through a form of state terrorism. He didn't use that word, but that seems to be what he's suggesting is being used here. Let's hear what he had to say on this phone call recorded with his consent.
These are the same people who formed the Coalition for a Drug-Free California to oppose Proposition 215, from Dan Lundgren on down. So it's no surprise that they would resort to their police power when it became clear to them that the voters were going to reject their medical marijuana policy wholesale on November 5th.
So today you're talking State Attorney General.
The State Attorney General, Governor Pete Wilson, the Bureau of Narcotics Enforcement, the Narcotics Officers Association, the Prison Guards Association, the California District Attorney Association, the California Sheriff's Association,
what about the
Drug War Stormtroopers?
What about the poor orphan wives of the Deputy Sheriff's Association?
I haven't seen them listed in the opposition coalition material.
Well, because you've been obviously too partisan in this whole matter.
Well, when it comes to people dying and going blind, I'll plead guilty to partisanship.
So the rumors that I've heard that there are problems with the initiative in terms of public support are groundless.
No, that's absolutely ridiculous. This initiative is going to win overwhelmingly. It doesn't matter what Dan Lundgren, muscle he tries to flex. The fact is that there's hundreds of people at the San Francisco Buyers Club right now standing guard. They will be open tomorrow. All the other clubs around the state will be open tomorrow. They can come in and they can put down and they'll be open the next day. The fact is this is a necessity. They think people are going to lie down and die quietly because of the policy. They better think again. It's not going to happen. And, I think they will take our case probably directly to them in San Diego in a week or so.
No way.
Well, we intend to go to their convention.
Republican Party convention?
You better believe it. This is a political ploy that I think has not only initiative ramifications, but national presidential ramifications. I think this is part of a broader plan that the Republicans have to try and stop the initiative and also discredit the Democrats.
What are the Democrats doing around us? Is there much support for the campaign among the official Democrat bureaucracies?
Well, I don't know. The endorsement process, since we've been qualified, is just getting underway. The Democratic Party has traditionally supported this as we've been in the legislature over the last 4 years. I think, clearly, while they didn't reopen the compassionate IND program in 93 when the Clinton administration considered that, they certainly left the door open to more research into marijuana's medical uses. I don't know how President Clinton will be on this, but you can bet that this issue will now squarely be in the middle of the 96 national campaign. We promise that.
You do, do you?
We do.
And you're not just one of those pot-smoking hippie types that root so much about?
Sorry, not me. I'm a church-going school teacher.
So, if you get any more information on whether there's actually going to be some direct action taken here in Santa Cruz, because it's...
Well, my intention is to be in Santa Cruz in the next 24 hours.
Okay, I'm at 423 Huff.
Pardon me?
I'm at 423 Huff.
Well, I think, see you at 5 o'clock at 201 Maple Street.
5 p.m. tomorrow?
Yep.
Sounds good to me.
And that was Scott Immler inviting people to come today at 5 o'clock to 201 Maple Street, which is the headquarters for the Cannabis Buyers Club, the compassionate use group that provides marijuana to those who are in medical need of it. That's 5 o'clock today, 201 Maple Street. And again, give a call to 423 Huff. I'm going to try to do updates on this phone periodically throughout the day.
Let the local law enforcement authorities see that whatever the prejudices and political priorities of the Republican policymakers and their stooges and pals in the governor's office or the local district attorney's office are, the people of Santa Cruz are not going to stand for trying to interfere with the medical treatments needed by people who are dying of different, very painful, debilitating diseases. Now we have a second interview with the San Francisco Cannabis Club, and we're speaking with John Entwistle up there, and here's that interview, taken a few moments after the last one with Scott Immler.
Robert Nurse here for Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, Robert, how are you?
All right. About 3 or 4 months ago, we did an interview with Dennis Perrone on cannabis issues, but this sounds like things are heating up here. I just talked to Scott Immler in Los Angeles, and we're a little concerned about the local attacks on the Santa Cruz chapter. Can you let us know what's been happening up there?
Apparently, the state police are attacking the Cannabis Buyers Club and the patients here. But they're basically apparently centering their attack on the San Francisco Club, which is intelligent because we really work pretty hard to you know, lead this movement. We're proud to take the hit and to hit back, I might say.
What actually has happened? How many people have been arrested?
No problems. They hit with like 200 shock troopers this morning and a couple of trucks to take away whatever they expected to find. But they didn't find very much, and nobody's in jail. And we got our building, and we're cleaning up and having a great old time as a group together. I mean, kind of a nice Sunday, actually, for us as a group. We were responding brilliantly, getting a lot of good press out of it. The state police were the ones behind it, but there was no city or local collaboration and no federal collaboration either.
Really?
Yeah.
So what actual state agencies are behind this?
BND, something like that, Bureau of Narcotics, something, I don't know.
And so nobody was actually arrested?
Nope.
Okay.
Lots of dumb questions, no arrests.
So are you going to be opening for business? Are you open for business today?
No, we never open on Sundays. We're cleaning up and doing responding. And then tomorrow we're going to be working on a demonstration at 8 o'clock.
In the morning?
Candlelight march at night, 8 o'clock at night.
Okay,
we don't get up at 8 in the morning in San Francisco for any time on a Monday. You should know that.
Oh, well,
Sorry.
Last time I was in San Francisco, I was simply spending time in jail, so I know very little about the city.
Okay, yeah. Jail's a good place, but even to avoid jail, we don't get up at 8 in the morning in San Francisco.
I was 5 in jail.
Yeah, no, that's why. That's for people in jail. That's what you avoid, see?
Okay.
No, what we're doing is we're going to focus on building our club back, getting to do the job again. We may take Monday and focus more on political events than on selling marijuana to sick and dying people. But on the other hand, we may open up and go for business as usual tomorrow. But I'll tell you what we're going to do in the long run. The long run is we're going to respond to this by passing ballot measure 215.
That's the initiative that will decriminalize marijuana for medical purposes?
And put us out of business while we're at it. Yep, that's the one.
That sounds like a good idea to me. So if people want to take part in this rally in San Francisco, we're actually, I think, planning a similar support. Well, we're going to do some massive support down here for the 201 Maple Street Cannabis Club.
Okay.
At 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But what can people do who are up in San Francisco? Where should they go?
Well, if you're in San Francisco, you want to join us at Church and Market Street tomorrow night.
Okay.
At 8 p.m.
And is it going to be a smoke-in or a walk?
No, that's a candlelight demonstration in March.
Candlelight demo in March. Okay. What number should they call for more information on this for updates?
621-3986.
621-3986, area code 415.
You bet.
And your name again is?
My name is John Entwistle.
Okay, John, I appreciate the update. Anything you want to add for folks here within the Santa Cruz?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Don't worry with the details. If we're handcuffed to the ground and we're not able to, like, do the job, you don't worry about that. I'll tell you what you worry about. You worry about getting Proposition 215 passed on November 5th. You do something for that proposition. Write us a check. Send it to Californians for Compassionate Use. That's a good way to get active. Do a house party. Do some flyers of your own that say yes on 215. Come out of your closet. Explain why somebody you love used it for medical purposes. Let's get this debate going. Let's see this all just be part of history and move on from here. Don't worry too much about us. Worry about the patients. Worry about setting up a system that's fair for people, that allows people to grow their own marijuana, that allows a doctor to work with a patient in California. And let's get this last sorry page of history behind us.
Sounds like a good idea, as I said before, John.
That's all we've ever wanted to do, is put ourselves out of business, put some clarity in this whole issue, get the cops out of the patients' lives, get the patients out of the cops' lives, and let's just all go on. We hold no grudge to the state police. We have no problem with any local police. We actually like police. We're really pro-cop kind of guys and women here. I mean, patients need cops, but they don't need to be busting our medicine, and that's where we're going to draw the line.
Thank you, John Whistle of the how do we turn your organization?
Californians for Compassionate Youth.
Again, you can reach John or someone else who's knowledgeable at 415-621-3986, and you can join him and hopefully hundreds if not thousands of others tomorrow at church in Market Street at 8 o'clock in the evening for a candlelight march.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
So by the time this tape is being played on Free Radio Santa Cruz, I'm afraid that all these announcements are going to be history, at least for Monday, August 5th. But perhaps not, perhaps not. So give a call to the Free Radio station number, 427-3772, for possible updates, and also to 423-HUFF. In June, there was good news from Philadelphia. Philadelphia radicals win suit in 1985 fire is the headline of the June 26th San Francisco Examiner story. Move survivor relatives get $1.5 million from city former officials by Dinah Weisenberg-Brin. 11 years after police dropped a bomb on the Move Row house, starting a fire that killed 11 people and destroyed a neighborhood, a jury has ordered the city and two former officials to pay $1.5 million to a survivor and relatives of two dead members of the radical group. After 9 days of deliberations, the jury found Monday that the city had used excessive force and violated Move's constitutional protection against unreasonable search and seizure. Ramona Africa, the only adult to survive the blaze, was awarded $500,000 from the city, $400,000 for pain and suffering, and $100,000 for disfigurement from burns suffered in the fire. Relatives of Move founder John Africa and his nephew Frank Africa, who both died, received a total of $1 million from the city for pain and suffering. Long live John Africa, Ramona Africa said after the verdict. The May 13, 1985 confrontation killed six adults and five children in the Move house and burned 61 homes in the surrounding neighborhood, despite a special commission finding that top city officials were grossly negligent and two grand jury investigations, no one from city government was criminally charged. Ramona Africa, 41, escaped with a 13-year-old boy, then known as Birdie Africa, by crawling through a basement window. She served 7 years in prison on a riot charge. She and relatives of the dead sued the city, former police commissioner Gregor Samber and former fire commissioner William Richmond. The jury ordered Richmond and Samber to pay Ramona Africa damages of $1 per week each for 11 years, specifying that the awards be paid weekly. Relatives of Frank and John Africa were awarded similar token amounts by the jury. They will not be able to put this case behind them, said Fincourt Shelton, the lawyer for Frank Africa's estate, noting that Samber and Richmond would have to think about people they didn't like every week for the next 11 years. The dollar amount doesn't matter. Birdie Africa, who now goes by the name Michael Ward, has settled with the city for $1.7 million. Both sides accused the other of starting a war on May 13, 1985. The city contended that Move had turned its home into an armed fortress, complete with a rooftop bunker and walls fortified with logs, and could have avoided harm by cooperating rather than shouting threats and shooting at the police. Move, a mostly black group whose members adopted the surname Africa, ate raw food, espoused equality with animals, and preached against technology, had been blaring profane anti-government messages over a loudspeaker from the house in protest over nine members who had been convicted of killing a police officer in 1978. A gunfight broke out as police, acting on complaints from neighbors, tried to serve arrest warrants against four of the members, including Ramona Africa. During the assault, police dropped a homemade satchel bomb from a helicopter to destroy the wooden bunker and open a hole for tear gas. The bomb missed and started a small fire on the roof. Samber and Richmond testified that they had decided to let the fire burn just long enough to destroy the bunker, but it quickly spread out of control. As long as Move maintained control of the bunker, they could have shot people on the street, Samber testified. I had to do everything I could to get rid of the bunker. The bunker was an immediate danger to life. Richmond testified he had wanted to fight the fire immediately, but had been hampered by police and fears of gunfire from the Move house. The bunker caved into the house, creating a firestorm inside. Shelton said the dead victim's skin was boiling on the bone. Jurors watched the videotape of the bomb being dropped, saw photos of the bunker, and heard from former Mayor Wilson Good and police officers and firefighters. They also heard from the head of the Philadelphia Special Investigation Commission, which in 1986 harshly condemned Good, Samber, former managing director Leo Brooks, and Richmond for their handling of the crisis. The commission had called dropping the bomb unconscionable and said the deaths of the five children appeared to be unjustified homicides. Good was dropped from Africa's lawsuit after a series of appeals. City taxpayers have spent $33 million to rebuild the houses, settle claims by the estates of dead MOVE members or children, and pay other costs related to the catastrophe. This is a story in San Francisco's June 26th Examiner. Again, we're not talking about a radical paper here. MOVE member Ramona Africa was in town last month, and she supported the City Hall Sleepers protest vigil, specifically speaking out in favor of Dan Hopkins and the others down there. And I was quite impressed, particularly since she was being feted by would-be radicals such as Mike Rodkin and so forth. So this is good news for her. There's also more of the story. There's a little capsule history here, which I'll read. Early 1970s, the group is founded by handyman Vincent Leiphart and social worker Donald Glassy. Leiphart later takes the name John Africa. May 1973, neighbors complain of garbage, fecal waste, and other health hazards at MOVE House. MOVE builds an 8-foot wall around the house. May 20th, 1977, MOVE members brandish weapons from wall during the 9-hour standoff. March 16th, 1978, police shut off food, water, and electricity to force surrender of 11 occupants on riot charges stemming from the 1977 confrontation. May 3, 1978, 50-day siege ends after negotiations. City says MOVE members have agreed to leave the house within 3 months. MOVE said it didn't agree to the deadline. August 2, 1978, judge orders arrests of 21 MOVE members for failure to meet the deadline. August 8, 1978, arrest attempt leads to 4.5-hour confrontation at MOVE House. Police officer James J. Ramp, 52, is killed and 7 other officers and firefighters are wounded. May 8, 1980, judge finds 9 MOVE members guilty of third-degree murder, criminal conspiracy, and attempted murder. Each is later sentenced to 30 to 100 years in prison. 1981, MOVE members start moving into 62221 Osage Avenue in West Philadelphia. That's 6221. Neighbors complain of poor hygiene, numerous animal, rodent, and insect infestation, harassment, and threats. April, May 1985, neighbors complain of MOVE members shouting profanities and political harangues throughout Bullhorn day and night. May 13th, and it continues. But let's end this tape by playing Mark Levy's MOVE song, which he wrote in the mid-80s about MOVE, and invite you to come back to Bathrop Spears Broadsides on Friday, when we would normally return from 10 to 12, and hopefully we'll be able to do that if we found a place for the station to be.
Late one Monday evening, the smoke was thick and black. The neighborhood was set ablaze by cops on the attack. Shots were flying through the flames and neighbors looked concerned as firefighters stood and watched a block of buildings burned. It was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and watch your wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. They had dirt and they had garbage, too many dogs and cats. Their children wandered naked, in their home they welcomed rats. They were loud and antisocial, they were violent and lewd. They were primitive and hostile, and they had to be subdued. So it was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and watch your wear. Urban renewal time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Their hair did not look proper. Their attitude was bad. Their radical ideas made decent people mad. We had to rout them out, you see. We had no other choice. The people here were all agreed in one disgusted voice. It was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. urban renewal, time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Oh, but please don't call it a bomb, it was an entry device. Those weirdos wouldn't leave, even when we asked them nice. We tried water guns and tear gas just to get those kooks to move. The bomb was not a good idea, though the mayor did approve. Cause it was urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal, time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Yes, it was urban renewal on the move from up above. Clearing out the riffraff from the city of brotherly love. So be sure to curb your lifestyle, clean your house and clothe your kids. Or you may wind up a rubble heap within the city's grids. When it's urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal, time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Urban renewal with a 1980s flair. If your home's the inner city, watch your looks and what you wear. Urban renewal, time for a Philly neighborhood. A family that would not move is now removed for good. Oh yes, a family that would not move is now removed for good. Well now, a family that did not move is now removed for good.
And that's all we have time for today. This is Bathrob's Pierre Robert Norris inviting you to join me again. Give a call to 423-4833 for updates on the cannabis crisis, the attack on the cannabis clubs throughout California and in San Francisco, and the reaction by the people defending the cannabis clubs. And also, if you have anything about civil rights for the poor here in Santa Cruz, leave me a message and I will put it on the air. 423-4833. Thanks again, and join me on Friday, or just keep your ear tuned to the station. Who knows, maybe I'll appear before then on another one of these tapes.
Now I sympathize with the homeless when I see them on the evening news. Somewhere there must be a place where they can park their weary shoes. Maybe a camp in the country or a building on the edge of town.